Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm El Greco, the Phoenix Sun, and I'm in the cave with my man, PLR.
Everyone, this is the Cave Show. This is CLR. One more day till Friday. I don't know about you, but I cannot wait. Coming on the show today, the one, the only, Ed Smith, former Major League Baseball, National Football League player, my brother. Can't wait to bring him on. He'll be coming up shortly. We are brought to you, as usual, by the one only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located in Chandler, Arizona, right on the corner of Alma School and Chandler Heights. Get on down there, let them know the PLR from the Cave Show sent you, and get 10% off of any cigar purchase that you have. Topics today, we're going to be talking NFL, we're going to be talking Major League Baseball. How about those Yankees? And we're actually going to talk a little NBA. Oh, boy, the Phoenix Suns laid an egg last night. And I mean they laid an egg. They laid an ostrich egg last night. On line with us right now, my man, the one and only, Ed Smith from Easy Sports Talk on NBC Radio. Brother Ed on the carry like you're all on. What's going on?
Hey, Brother Paul, what you up to, man?
Still trying to get my eyes to clean up from what I witnessed last night during that Suns Trailblazer game.
It's funny because, you know, I got lost in all the baseball traffic last night, and really what, you know, I wasn't paying attention to, you know, the fact that it was opening night for Suns, and I heard you just talking. I thought, let me go take a quick peek to see what he's talking about. And I can see... That I just looked at the score and it made me gag, man. See,
at one point,
that's actually a pretty pathetic effort.
And at one point, I got up to run downstairs to the media room to get something to drink, and bumped into knew someone that was there that I knew, a friend of mine, and you know him and I talked for a second, and I went downstairs, got my drink, came back upstairs. When I left to go downstairs, they were down by like 11 points. When I came back up, they were down by 20-some points. I was like, what happened? I couldn't have been gone that long. And then I look up again, and they're down by 55. And I'm like, wow. I mean, it is hard to get down by 55 in basketball. It's real hard.
Yeah. So I guess for someone who obviously didn't catch the game, my apologies to all those Suns fans out there, what was it that was so bad from your view? Like how did it get to that point where they were down that much? Was it just bad offensive presence? Was it, you know, what happened?
For the first time ever to me, and in the last couple years, they didn't look ready to play. And as a fan, honestly, of Earl Watson, and I'll admit it, I'm one of the guys that thinks that he's done a good job here. And when people say he should be like, oh, I never agreed with that. Last night, they just didn't look ready to play basketball. And I don't know what it was. There was no energy. The effort was waning. I didn't believe for one second I was actually watching the Suns play because it was utterly pathetic. When you can play a team that's hot and hot shooting. I mean, we've all seen Golden State play, but when a team shoots 14 of 24 from the 3-point line at 58%, you're simply not closing out, and you're not putting up an effort to close out, and that's odd to say of a of an Earl Watson team. If anything, they play hard because they know they have to. But they were up 9-2, and next thing you know, they're down. So they came out with a little bit of effort, but somewhere along the way, I hate to say this, but I think they got out toughed because when Portland started hitting shots and Lillard went on a little run, which is not odd, it's almost like they took the punch and they gave up. I hate to say gave up in terms of giving up, but they took the punch and they never hit back.
Well, the oddest part for me is you would assume something like this would happen middle of the season, the doldrums, they may be in a bad skid or something like that. To come out home opener your first game of the year, that's when you figure, how much more energy do you that's the number that you would probably have the most of any in the whole entire season, barring getting into the playoffs. So the fact that it was an opening night, they took a hit like that right out of the box, that does not shine well for, the season moving forward.
It doesn't. And this team, okay, everyone has a ceiling of what teams are going to win. And I heard someone yesterday literally say that the Suns could win 35 games. And this is before they played. And I'm thinking, what planet are you coming from? And there's no secret in this valley that I to steal a word from the young kids, I'll put on a cape for the Phoenix Suns any day of the week. I mean, there's no secret that I like the moves they made. I like the fact that they've gone young. I said that, maybe they should have made a trade with one of their young guys to bring in a veteran that's already won before. But when they didn't, I said, okay, well, just got to be patient. Let time pass, let the young kids grow up. But when they play like that, I almost say, we're going to let the young kids play. Let's let the young kids play. And if this is the type of points we're going to lose by, at least let's lose with effort. And last night, up until the fourth quarter, there seemed to be little resistance to whatever Portland wanted to do. And to me, that was just weird to watch the Suns play like that.
Yeah, I had much higher hopes for him. I remember we were sitting at the baseball game just about a week and a half ago, and I asked you what your thoughts on what the season would be, and you were a little more positive than what you're sounding tonight. So what you saw yesterday was obviously it's going to leave a bitter taste in your mouth until they rebound and show you more. But how long a season could this be if that's one of their better efforts of the year?
Here's my hope for them. They played a playoff team, and they played a team that's clearly going to go back to the playoff that just seemed more ready to play. On Friday, I think it's more of a litmus test. You're playing the Lakers, who's really young as well. They're just as young as you are at almost every position. Very few veterans that can play are on that team. So you have, you have a rookie point guard in Lonzo Ball. You have Kuzma, who, except for us basketball geeks, no one even knew who he was until he showed out at Summer League. So I'm anxious to see how the Suns match up against the Lakers. Now, win or lose, I'm not worried about. Now, I would think they would beat the Lakers here, young team versus young team, and maybe when they go to L.A., then it trades off. But there has to be effort, and there has to be more effort. And to me, effort isn't shown by shooting shots. It's shown on the defensive end, and that's where they were really lackluster.
I'll give you an example of what I think you're talking about. The fact that the San Francisco 49ers are 0-6, their record would tell you that they stink. But if you watch them every week, they're in the ball game. You're getting that effort. They're out there making it close. They've had leads that they've lost late, But, you can see the guys are out there laying it all on the line. The record doesn't tell you that, but, your eye test does. And I know that's probably what you're looking for from the Suns. You're not expecting them to jump from non-playoff team to top four in the division or anything like that. But you want to see that daily grind. You want to see them go out there and show you that they care about it as much as you do as a fan.
Exactly. And so, the good thing about basketball, there's 82 of them. So maybe this one was just the stinker. Maybe it was, everyone has a game in the NBA, no matter how good you are, that you want to throw away, no matter what.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this is the game. I just, To me, it was just disappointing. They had a full house, and it was a full house that was rooting for the Suns. And, you know, it may not be too popular down here to say it, but the only time you usually get a full house is when they come to see the other team play. So
yeah.
It was actually a full house for the Suns. This Friday night, it's going to be a full house, but we live so close to L.A., you know what it's going to be. It's going to be the L.A. Laker fans, and they're going to talk about the Messiah, Lonzo Ball, and how he's Magic Johnson, and how this year he'll average a triple-double and take them all the way to the finals. And you're looking at them like, go find yourself, dude. They're going to miss the playoffs just like the Suns are. So, but it was nice to have a sellout home crowd. But we shall see. I know this, though. We have a call online. I'm going to bring them in here. Let's see what we got. There we go. Caller, thank you for calling in. This is PLR. This is the Cave Show. You are with me and online, the one and only Ed Smith.
How you doing, gentlemen? PLR, this is LOU.
Hey, how are you, my man? How are you today?
Right. Well, you were right about that game last night. Oh, boy. Not a way to start off your season, that's for sure. That was a massacre.
Yes, it was. Well,
now,
I'll tell you what. At least at home you could turn the channel. I was sitting
right
through.
Exactly. You know, I wasn't able to see the game because I was concentrating on the other stuff with other scores and the other games going on. But from what I saw on the scoreboard, this is embarrassing. I can only imagine what the rest of the season is going to be like for the Suns.
Well, like I said, I think it's definitely going to get better. I treat that as an anomaly, not as anything more than that. And that's the best way I think I can look at it right now, just because let me rephrase this again. I hope it was an anomaly. I hope that this isn't the way the season turns out. Let's just say the playoff team was ready, and the non-playoff team took a punch and couldn't answer back.
And the Warriors actually lost the game last night. The defending champions go down their first game of the season.
Yeah, but you know what? I put absolutely and Ed, I'm sure you agree with me on this one. Last year, San Antonio walked into Oracle and beat the Warriors by like 25, 30 points, and everyone said, "Oh, see, I told you they're not as good. That was a one-trick pony." Well, by the end of the season, and only going 16-1 in the playoffs, they definitely proved not to be a one-trick pony. It's a lot. To get your rings, it's a lot that first game because everyone's happy. No matter how much you try to focus on the game, you just got your rings. You're feeling good. Your player that holds everything together got hurt that night. You know, Draymond Green And I was actually going to bring that up a little bit later. His MRI is negative, so it's just, you know, a sore knee. But all that going on, it's real easy to lose focus.
I was thinking the same thing
as
you because with that, you know, getting the rings, the whole ceremony, you know, they couldn't have been too focused. And obviously, you know, we're going to see them clip off a whole bunch of games. And they'll be, you know, you look at that talent. You can't hide talent in the NBA. You know, other sports you can kind of get around it, but when you got those the best, you know, some of the best five players in the entire league on the court at the same time, it's just going to be one of those things where they're going to get to a point where they're rolling through the regular season, and we'll see how far they go into the postseason. But I wasn't too concerned about that opening loss.
One loss doesn't make a season.
Well, yeah.
That's true.
While you're on the phone, I'm sure, and Ed, you were talking about it right when we came on. What's up with the Yankees? Do they have to be down 2-0 before they remember that? Is it they're young, house money? Ed, you play ball. And they're like, you know what? Whatever. We'll just go out there. We'll swing away. Aaron Judge can strike out 12 times in a row and then hit two 800-feet home runs, and no one cares that he struck out 12. What is up with this team?
A little bit of it's confidence and being at home for the most part. You know, if you think about it, they didn't play that bad in Houston. They lost 2 1-run games, you know, 2-1 back-to-back. So, I mean, if anything, you would look at Houston's lineup and trying to figure out what's going on with them. The Yankees, like I said, they're young, they're fun, they're having fun. And if you think about it, they're playing with house money right now. They're not even supposed to be there. So all the pressure, they're feeling none of the pressure and just having fun. And now they're on a roll, and we'll see if they can carry that back to Houston. But if I'm a Houston fan, I'm really nervous right now.
I'm going to say this. It's going to go seven. I don't think that Gray is going to be the one to do the job tomorrow. I think it's going to have to be up to CC to pull us through.
Here's what's crazy. I think the same thing that's going to happen is going to happen to Houston now that happened to Cleveland. Cleveland came in hot on fire. You lose two games at home or two games on the road like the Indians, and you go back home and all the pressure is on you because you're like, oh, crap, we've got to win. We're going to lose to a team that's a year away. Now the same thing's happened to Houston. Rarely does the team that's not as good split, you know, not get two wins, let alone three wins at home. Houston's going back saying, wow, what happened? I think they're a little shell-shocked, to be perfectly honest with you. So I think the pressure actually is, obviously it's on Houston because it's an elimination game. The Yankees have played an elimination game in this playoff series already. Houston hasn't. We know how the Yankees can respond, but do we really know how Houston can do it with their backs against the wall?
Well,
I think that's the big difference.
Well, in my opinion, all the pressure lies on Houston because, like you said, it's elimination time for them. And and as far as your thought on, you know, them winning it in seven or, you know, the game going seven, in my opinion, because the Houston bats have gone so silent and the Yankees' middle of their lineup is like almost awoke, that could, I mean, pitching, you know, you just beat their ace and Keuchel. Now you're going back to face Verlander. I know he's got a lot of experience, but you let the Yankees get off to a good start, and all of a sudden some of those booties get a little tight, and you could be sending Houston home early. So I'm looking for the Yankees to continue what they're doing, continue to put pressure on Houston, and that'll, you know, I think the first few innings of that game will tell you a whole lot.
Very much so. Very much so. But, hey, Lou, listen, I appreciate you calling in as usual, and tomorrow's Friday. We hopefully we'll hear back from you then, and have a good, I call it a good Friday Eve.
Thanks a lot.
All righty, my friend, take care. And as you were saying, man, I always say those other cheeks they start to pucker up on you when pressure builds. it's a whole different story. So, the Cubs. I can't believe I did it. I thought the Cubs were going to win. How important, though, is it for the Dodgers to win and not get back to L.A. and let this go seven? How important is it tonight for them to win this game?
You know, I think the biggest importance is if they can close this one out, then they can set their rotation, get a few extra days of rest, and get ready for the World Series. I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think there's any way, even if they do go back to L.A., I don't see the Cubs getting two in L.A. I think the biggest thing for the Dodgers is getting it done as fast as possible so they can set their rotation, get everybody ready for the World Series because, I mean, as you've seen, it's taken everything the Cubs have had just to get that one yesterday. And the Dodgers are just, in my opinion, just the better team in this series and might be just the better team, you know, the best team in baseball this year. It doesn't always work out where they win, but with what they've done to this point, I don't see, you know, you got your ace on the hill tonight with Kershaw. This is where he's supposed to earn that money and put some of his skeletons or his demons away. You know, everybody always talks about how he's not a great postseason pitcher. This is his opportunity to go in and close one out and then, you know, put some people, the silence of people. So I anticipate him giving them everything he's got tonight.
You know, what's funny is their manager, Roberts, he was on the ball as a player on the Red Sox team when they came back 0-3 and beat the Yankees. Could you imagine what would be going through his mind if he gets back to L.A. and it's 3-2, or is he's in L.A. and it's 3-3, when, especially since he lived it on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, the last thing they want is to go back to the L.A. They want to put this one to rest. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's that's what he's in their ear talking about tonight. So, you know, we'll see how they come out. I always like when in these type of games, like the first three or four innings always shows me who's feeling a little tight and who's not. And obviously with the Dodgers, they're up 3-1 with comforts of knowing, hey, if we lose this and we still get to go home. And, you know, and here's another factor you throw in there too, Paul, is sometime that team that's down 3-1, even though they got a little fight left in them, but, you know, who wants to go all the way back to L.A. and, you know, try to do this and we don't end up doing it, we got to come all the way back home. Those little bits of doubt, like say if the Dodgers jump on top of them real quick, you're going to have a whole bunch of, at least a couple dudes, in my opinion, it always never fails. There's going to be at least a couple dudes that are like, well, we had a good season. And who the heck wants to go all the way back out to L.A. anyway? And if that happens, like I said, game, set, match.
That's true. As L.A. is saying, we're going back to L.A. The thing is, we don't want you to come with us.
Exactly.
We
want to
go by. We want to go by ourselves. I, you know what, though? The thing with the Cubs tonight, they have to get to Kershaw early. And more than that, their pitcher has to be dominant. They need close to a complete game. But their bullpen, one, until you get to Davis, is god-awful. And he threw 42 pitches last night. So there's no way he can come back and throw tonight. It's just not possible. So
yeah,
they have to – their pitcher has to go deep.
Yeah, that's the one thing. It's funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and nowadays it seems like the new norm is guys start looking right around the fifth inning. They start looking out into the bullpen to see, you know, who's up and getting ready. And you can't have that mentality if you're trying to extend this series. They're going to have to go, you know, deep into the game, like you said, and give them an opportunity. And, like, they have to get at Kershaw early, because if you let him get the rolling – now, I will say this one thing, though. Kershaw is one of those guys, he's rolling, then out of nowhere he'll just have that one bad inning. Doesn't it seem like that's the case all the time? Because if you look at his numbers – it always looks like he has, you know, he's throwing a great game, but he's given up four, and all four of those runs are in that one inning where he gave up two run bombs or something like that. So, you know, there's always that light for the Cubs, but for the most part, like I said, if you let him get rolling and he starts throwing that deuce on you, and you know, has the guys off stride, and it could be a very quick night for the Cubs. So I know Cubs fans are looking to try to repeat. It all starts tonight, man.
It really does. On the Kerry Lackey Law Line with us. One only Ed Smith, Easy Sports Talk Show on NBC Radio. Okay, so when you watch, and I'm going to move to football after this, but when you watch Aaron Judge hit home run that far, who does it remind you of from back in the day?
He's kind of a Dave Kingman type guy. I mean, and Kingman was kind of all or nothing as well, but when he hits him, man, he hits him. And here's the other thing. You can always throw on the typical you would lean toward this myself. I don't mention the steroid guys like your Mark McGwire or your Canseco, because a lot of that was chemically enhanced, and we will never know, you know, unless something comes out 100% about Judge. But I'm looking at his size and his swing, and it all looks natural to me. And you know, like I said, you go back to a King, like Kingman, very. It reminds me very much of him and his style. The one thing I will say about Judge is he's very particular about what he swings at, you know, gets deep into count. It's just so every now and then he forgets to make that adjustment and, you know, use the other side of the field, because they consistently go after him with that soft stuff away, you know, kind of pound him inside, go away. So they have a formula. If he ever gets consistent, you know, where he can cut some of those strikeouts down and put the ball in more in play. I mean, obviously, he hit 52 home runs this year. He's going to be a beast to deal with. He might turn into one of those guys that, like, they used to, you know, put Barry Bonds on for no reason at all, just walk him. He might be one of those dudes you eventually have to give that kind of treatment to.
I still remember when I can't think of the old manager for the Dodgers. He does. They're announcing now but he walked Barry Bonds one time with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
And I just started laughing, and they're like, "What are you laughing?" I'm like, "This dude would rather give up one run than risk giving up four." I'm like, "He just walked in a run to not face Barry Bonds." I'm like, "That's scary." I mean, that's when you know you have the ultimate respect.
Well, think about this. Now, back then, you actually had to throw the four pitches. Imagine now, he just put up four fingers and said, "Just go. Just go. We're not even going to throw the pitches."
I don't like it as well. Well, how many times have we seen someone stick out the four fingers and the pitcher misses the target and a run moves up or a runner, you know, run, like I said, a runner moves up or a runner scores or whatever? You just taking that element out the way to save, a minute off of a game that lasts long anyway. To me, that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
I'm not a fan of it either. I used to always like to stand up there when I was getting intensity to walk. I would just kind of, you know, stand up there and talk to the catcher and pretend like I was going to reach out and get one. But that was a little bit of your time to stand and profile a little bit. You know, you get in a nice little rhythm while you're standing there. And, you know, I used to have fun with it. So that part of the game is gone now.
It is. You know what? It's funny because everyone thinks that making the game faster will make the game better. I don't think so. I think there's so much excitement you could put back in the game if everything wasn't home run or nothing. I mean, stolen bases to me makes the game fun. If you the year Ricky Henderson stole, I want to say 120, 124, people watch to see if Ricky went 0-for-3, everyone was like, "Oh, man." I mean, you wanted to see him get on. You wanted to see him steal bases. And it was fun. That was fun baseball. Just, you know, your seventh hitter hitting 40 home runs and never putting down a sacrifice button, never moving on over. Your two hitter in a two hole now, they're hitting 40 home runs. I remember when the shift was almost impossible because guys would put down a butt. Now you look at it, you see the shift. I see Schwarber with the shift. Dude, bunt the ball. Put the butt down. You can bring them out. It's like college basketball. You play a zone, you know what? You hit a couple threes, what do? They come right out of that zone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. I hate the shift. I can't remember when it exactly started coming into play. I remember facing it a couple times. It was going way back if I was still playing. But, you know, late, mid-90s, I remember a couple times people throwing it out there. But never every time somebody comes to the plate. It's just, for me, it's kind of unsportsmanlike almost to a certain degree. And like you said, it just takes away so much of the other aspects of the game. I guarantee you, they'd have put a shift on me too many times. I don't care. I'd get the average up. I'd have started bunting on them.
Yeah, because all you got to do is do it two or three times, and they'll come out of it. Do it two or three times. They will come out of that like crazy. But, you know what? It is how it is. There's, and I said we were going to go to football, but there's a couple other things in basketball. Unfortunately, did you see the Gordon Hayward injury by chance?
I can only look at it once, Paul. I mean, that's one of those ones. Just the thought of it makes me cringe. That was rough to watch. How many times did you look at it?
I saw it twice, and that was two times too many. I have this thing where if your leg is straight up, but your foot is facing the other way, and your bone is coming out of your leg, that's just not good. And I hear people saying, well, maybe he could be, I think he'll make a full recovery. It'll take a lot of work, just like it did Paul George, but he's not going to come back this season. And even if he gets right enough to be quote unquote healed, he won't play right this season. This is let it rot. Let him sit out the year. Because remember, Paul George tried to come back at the very end of the season, and he looked tentative, and he was jumping off one foot. And all that does is make you get injured more on the other side of your body because you're not mentally doing it, but you're compensating for the injury because you don't trust it yet.
Yeah.
Even if he's healed, let him sit. You know, the bad part about this is that it happened to him. The lining may be some of the young guys on Boston went out to get some experience. But the most important thing is to get him healthy and right, because Gordon Hayward was a secret hidden in Utah. He would have been seen in Boston. He can flat out play.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's amazing how that happens. You know, all the build up through the off season, and, you know, one quarter in, you know, pretty much just everything just collapsed. So this is one of those freakish things. That's how sports, you know, the injuries are the great equalizer out there at all times.
So we have football. We have football tonight. And a question I want to ask you, because you've seen this way more than anyone else has on the inside. So 2 weeks ago, Kansas City is balling, and Andy Reid is using his weapons, and everything is great. They lose one game, and now all of a sudden, Andy Reid doesn't know what he's doing. Why in football is everything so dramatic? I mean, did we think they'd go 16-0? It's like, excuse me, coaches are so funny. Belichick can lose two games and look bad losing two games, and everyone says, oh, he'll get that fixed. And they still give up over 300 yards per game, but he'll get that fixed. Andy Reid has one bad week, and he's terrible.
I'll give you, in my opinion, give you two numbers, 5 and 7. That's because Belichick has been to 7 and won 5. So he's got cash, he's got that money in the bank. Andy Reid is still looking for that one, and you know his history in Philly. He got the one, you know, and they didn't come through with that one. Then a lot of his teams, even though I think he's always taken mediocre talent and elevated it, but he's always that guy that has gotten close, but he still doesn't have that big one, that big check in his pocket. So that's always going to, until he wins one, everybody's always going to fall back on that. And if you think about it, what has Kansas City done over the last couple of years? They've always put a team together that looks like, hey, this might be their year. Then they go to in New England and get knocked out of the playoffs, or typically it'll go to a Pittsburgh or something like that. So this was just more evidence of, hey, they were rolling, steamrolling through everybody. Pittsburgh, after the beatdown they took last week, who in their right mind, including me, thought that they were going to go in there and have any chance? I thought this was going to be the beatdown of the week. That defense was going to jump all over Roethlisberger, and they were going to have them confused and confuddled and all that kind of stuff. And what did they do? They came out and punched them in the mouth. And, I mean, basically, as I always say, did not even punch you in the mouth. Give me your lunch money, too. And that's kind of what happened. So now, for me, for until I'm not jumping, it's going to be hard for me to jump back on that Kansas City bandwagon with both feet. I might get on inside saddle for a minute, but until I see them rebuild that momentum that they started with the first five, you know, I'm right there with a whole lot of people. It's almost like, oh, here we go again.
I hear you. You know, Pittsburgh, for whatever reason, Pittsburgh just matches up well against Kansas City. They did it to them in the playoffs, and they did it to them again, you know, the other night. I think there are certain teams that just beat certain teams. And Pittsburgh and Le'Veon Bell, they just, I mean, it's almost like he lights up when he sees them. And you know what, though?
Yeah.
I didn't expect Ben Roethlisberger. You know, everyone's saying he bounced back, and I don't think he bounced back. I think he was able to turn and hand very well, and he threw a short interception that ended up being a touchdown because you have Antonio Brown on your side.
Yep.
I don't know if he's back. I just think that his team won. To me, that doesn't mean he's back.
No, not at all. Until I have to see more consistency from them because, you know, and the other thing is, can we get a week or a moment when somebody within that organization isn't dissatisfied or running their mouth? Now, you know, somebody else wants to be traded and, you know, who is it, Latavius or no, which one is it? I can't remember. But, yeah, now somebody else wants to be traded, and it's like we thought we got past all that, but here we go again.
You know what? It's funny because certain teams can let their – you look at Seattle, they're always bickering. They're always on the open. Their coach gives them free reign to say what they want to say. They could tweet. They could do whatever. A big difference from what you can and can't do in New England. But somehow, some way, you look up at the standings, and every year you think that's it for Seattle, you look up and there they are again. Pittsburgh doesn't play well like that, and I think part of the reason is because you hear all the bickering in Seattle, but you hear nothing from Russell Wilson. When your quarterback, the leader of the team, is doing most of the bickering and keeping things going over and over, I think that goes a long way to keep things going the wrong way. And if Ben to me, he could settle things down by going to the locker room and just saying, hey, everyone, just shut up. Let's just go out and play. Quit the bickering, quit the tantrums, let's go play. But he's like the first one out there, you know, he got his toenail hurt and he'll come out in the walking boot. It's like everything is drama with him. And I'm not going to say he's not an elite quarterback because I think he is. I think he's a very good quarterback. He's won Super Bowls. He's done all that, as they call it. He's a made man. But I think running the team and team control is the one thing Ben has always missed out on a little bit.
Oh, you couldn't have hit it any harder on the head, Paul, because he is the biggest drama queen almost out of all of them sometimes. And then here's the other thing he likes to do, because he's the quarterback and because he's in front of the camera the most, when other guys either slip up or say something, instead of him going across the locker room, sitting in front of somebody in front of their locker and having a quick chat with them, which could, you know, douse all the fires, he gets in front of the cameras and just like tries to play Jedi mind tricks. He's out there always talking about somebody but not talking about him, but we all know who he's talking about, that type of stuff.
Yep.
And then that gets back to the player, and then it's back and forth. Like I said, a Tom Brady, a Drew Brees, they put that stuff to rest so fast. They're like, look, we're not here to talk about that. This is, you know, that's the type of stuff we keep within our locker room. And that's where it's going to stay. Instead, like I said, Ben likes to get out there, John McQueen he is, and you know, try to fool us all into thinking he's a leader. And sometimes he's the biggest problem within that clubhouse.
Exactly. You know what? I've come to a conclusion with wide receivers. Just let them be divas. You can't do anything about it. They're divas. I mean, you go back to people say, well, that all started with Michael Irvin. No, it didn't. Drew Pearson was a diva. It just there wasn't social media then. Lance Swan was they didn't do it the way they do it now. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't Instagram. There wasn't Snapchat. But wide receivers have always been a little diva-ish. They always want the ball. If you find a wide receiver that says he was covered, he's no good. He's no good. That commercial that Randy Moss has when my man says, "Don't worry, I got you covered." He's like, "Nobody ever covered me." That's a wide receiver. That's a great receiver. That never covered.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you fight it. Let them be them. Let them do them. You know, we all know. I mean, a good quarterback knows how. You know, a good leader knows how to keep everybody happy. And sometimes you just have to, you know, whatever their strengths are, you have to take their strengths with some of their knuckleheadness, but, you know, like I said, just let them roll. I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you ever heard Drew Brees talk about a receiver or, you know, or like downplay what they do? If anything, he pumps them up in order for them to go out there and give him even more. Tom Brady the same way. He had to deal with Randy Moss, and he pulled that off with the most expertise I've ever seen. He had Randy, you know, they scored. They broke records together, you know.
Yeah. And it's, one, Brady is that good, but so was Randy Moss. I mean, look, there's certain players, I don't care who they are, who you are, who's covering them. If Randy Moss stuck that hand up like he used to do to let you know he's open, I'm throwing the ball. I don't care if they're in a dime and all six DBs are on him. If I see that hand go up, I'm rearing back and throwing it as hard and as far as I can.
Exactly.
There's just some guys. And you know what? To me, I don't know. I hear all these people talking about Odell Beckham and how he's too much of a headache and they wouldn't sign him. Let him be a free agent, and if the Bears don't sign him, I'm cursing them out.
Well, now I will go this far. Sometimes, every now and then, you got to reel them in just a little bit. If I was I would definitely try to keep Odell's passion. But I would tell him, hey, dude, look, even some of the stuff you do is just a little over the top. I'm not saying, you know, eradicate it all, but if you're out there peeing and doing all kind of crazy stuff, you know, that's just taking away from your brilliance on the field. So I would, as a teammate, if I had that kind of clout, I would try to at least pull him a little closer to center mass, not necessarily all the way, because somebody like him, he needs that, you know, that, I guess, that other side to keep him, you know, motivated and you know, I guess, connected. But like I said, there's some dudes that do try to take it a little too far. He's one of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. You know what? I would say there's a couple guys out there that's like that. But I would rather have to reel in personality than try to get talent to play. Once heard an interview of Fat Lever once told me that about DeMarcus Cousins. He said, I'd rather have a guy with DeMarcus Cousins' talent and have to try to get him to calm down some of the passion than have a guy I got to beg to play. And I was like,
absolutely.
That's a good way of looking at it. Couple real quick things before we jump here. The league had a meeting. All the owners, 11 owners met with players. Do you think, I'm going to ask this two ways. Do you think if things are left alone, players and owners will eventually work together and the standing will start? But do you think that if the president of the United States keeps opening his mouth, that this is going to go on longer and longer because players are going to feel like we're going to have to prove our point even more?
Yeah, I think until you get him uninvolved, because he is the great divider, as the leader of a free world should be trying to bring us all together. His mission seems to be to try to pull more people to his side and continue to divide America instead of bring us together. With that being said, it's almost like which comes first, the chicken or the egg, because as long as he's in the mix, players are going to, you know, they're not going to want to basically kowtow or bow down to him. And he's got so many of those owners in his back pocket through donations and some of their friendships and stuff like that. The players, in my opinion, are always going to feel like it's us against them, because if you're either with me or you're against me, that's a term I always use. And if any of them are siding with him, as far as the players are concerned, you're against us. So that's always going to be a divider between, you know, the players and the union and ownership. So in my opinion, until he gets uninvolved, which I don't see that happening in the next 3.5 years, you know, and hopefully this doesn't drag on forever. Hopefully the players, because in my opinion, everything is getting clouded. It's smoke and mirrors, because now we're so focused on who's standing and who's sitting or kneeling for an anthem, when the real issue is, hey, can we start focusing more on equality in this country and some of the other issues? But, you know, people get on these platforms, they try to use it for whatever they want, and including that guy in the office. I don't even like to give him the power of, you know, the title of his position. So that dude that keeps, you know, running his mouth and tweeting and everything, until he stops, it's just going to continue on, in my opinion.
The owner of Jacksonville today, Mr. Khan, said part of the reason he's doing this is because he's still jealous, because the USL partially folded because of him taking the other owners and trying to compete with the NFL when they won their $3 lawsuit, because the USFL actually was really popular in the summertime with the schedule that it had. And when he tried to force the merger and it didn't work, that's part of the reason why he's still upset. And then when he tried to buy the Bills in 2014 and that failed, he's still upset with the NFL over that as well. And it's funny, because the two people that are the most prominent that are raging on the NFL the most are him and Rush Limbaugh, who also failed to buy the St. Louis Rams when so many players said that if he bought the team, as soon as they were free agents, they would opt to leave. So it's kind of funny that no one is looking at it from they have such a platform, a bully pulpit, that they're doing the most talking, but people forget that they also have a vendetta as well against. So just kind of interesting. I think the players want to stop, to be honest with you. I think part of the thing is players don't want to stop, and then here, well, good, this is it, we made them stop. And I think that they have
exactly.
to get through that, and everything will, you know, will work out. But I'm interested to see what happens this week after the owners' meetings with the players and see what happens. So, Brother Ed, tell me tell everyone where they can hear your show at and your social media.
Every Saturday on NBC Sports Radio, 10:60 a.m. from 10 to 12. And the Easy Sports Talk Show continues to roll on. And you can catch me on Twitter at Ed Smith Speaks. The website is edsmithspeaks.com, and same thing with Instagram at Ed Smith Speaks.
You know, I am sorry that I missed the show last Saturday. The Freeloaders had a football game, and the eldest Freeloader, they lost the game, and he said, "I'm tired of losing games." And I was like, "Uh-oh, the competitiveness is really coming out now." He said, "That's 4 in a row. I'm tired of losing." I said, uh-oh, but it's coming out. This has been The Cave Show. You can get us, of course, on social media at The Sports Cave on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The website is thesportscave.com. Cave is always with the K. You can get me at PLR on Sports on Twitter. And brother, I appreciate you joining us on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Appreciate all the callers. So until tomorrow, everyone take care. This is the Cave Show.
Thanks, Brother Paul.